Do you want to try and find him?
I can be beat.
You're listening to the Brandon Dowling Show on Jet Nation Radio. Now here is your host, Brandon Dowling.
All right. Good evening, Jet Nation Radio. This is not Brandon Dowling. I am Glenn Naughton. I'm going to be sitting in for Brandon tonight. He has something to take care of. He will be back with you next week. As I'm sure most of you heard, the hot story tonight is going to be Sheldon Richardson, with this being day one of camp. Most of us anticipated talking extensively about the developments throughout Todd Bowles' first full day on the job. But unfortunately, just 2 weeks after his suspension for what was alleged to be a positive marijuana test, we've learned that Sheldon Richardson, star defensive end for the Jets, was arrested 2 weeks after his suspension was announced for what was reportedly a plethora of issues. He was apparently drag racing with two other vehicles. He was clocked at 143 miles an hour. Attempted to evade police. When they did catch up with Richardson, he was found in a driveway with two other adults in the car, a fully loaded handgun under his seat, and a 12-year-old child. Again, this is all breaking news, so we know how these things go. The story may change as it goes along. I don't imagine there will be any good version of this story. But if we're to believe everything that's being reported right now, Sheldon Richardson's a pretty lucky man because the early reports are that he is facing charges for resisting arrest. I've heard nothing of child endangerment. I've heard nothing about the weapons possession. I've heard nothing about the reported drug paraphernalia, there was the smell of marijuana coming from the vehicle. So I don't think it would be too far of a reach to say he was partaking, given the fact that he had tested positive just a couple of weeks earlier, or the results were announced a couple of weeks earlier. So you've got drug use, loaded gun, 12-year-old child in the car, driving in excess of 140 miles an hour in a 50-mile-an-hour zone, and resisting arrest, and Sheldon's being looked at for resisting arrest. But before we get any further into that, I'd like to talk a little bit about our guest tonight. Very special guest, very lucky to be joined by Greg Bishop of Sports Illustrated. We are expecting him to call in shortly. Greg, as many of you may know, wrote the story, the recent Sports Illustrated story that featured Darrell Revis on the cover, in which they did a magnificent job of replicating the old SI issue that had Joe Namath, and Namath actually had a hand in reenacting some of the pictures they used both for the cover and within the article. Great article from Greg, really excellent read. Greg's a Syracuse grad who earned himself 10 AP Sports Editor Awards, and some of you may not realize he actually started out, he was a columnist for the Seahawks in Seattle before becoming a beat writer for the Hawks, and moved on to the New York Times in 2007, where he took over and as a beat writer for the Jets for the Times. After that, after his time at the Times, he moved on to SI last year in 2014 and has a little bit of experience covering the team, and recently, again, had the opportunity to meet with Darrell Revis, speak with him extensively about his time with the Jets after being drafted, then, of course, the time away from the Jets for a couple of years in Tampa and New England, and now Revis's thoughts on his return. So we look forward to him calling in a little bit. But first, let's talk about today's training camp news that was coming across the wire. I'm sure all the diehards were tuned in, had their Twitter feeds going crazy with the number of outlets we have at our disposal. And going to go over a few things. It was good to hear that Marcus Gilchrist was on the field. He didn't participate in OTAs, as many of you know, due to his shoulder surgery. The free agent import from San Diego, probably the best cover safety the Jets have had in quite some time. Heard about Brian Winters getting some reps at right guard. Geno Smith was hot and cold. Same goes for Antonio Cromartie. We heard about Brent Qualley, who's a guy not a lot of fans are familiar with. He's an offensive lineman from Nebraska, where he started at offensive tackle for a couple seasons. And the Jets had him on their practice squad last year, where they moved him inside to guard. And the new regime, either they like something they've seen in him, or they want to decide whether or not they're going to hang on to him, because he got significant reps with the ones a couple of months ago, and now again today. We'll talk a little bit about Dexter McDougal, D. Milner, those guys managing to avoid the pup despite their significant injuries last year. I think a lot of people expected at least Milner to land on the pup, but he did not. McDougal was running at full speed a few months ago, so not a huge surprise there to hear that he's come far long enough that he too is able to avoid it. And we'll talk about the QB competition, because as we all know, with the Jets, as has been the story for many years now, it's all about the quarterback. Jets have had some good years, some bad years, more bad recently than not. And again, it's boiled down to the quarterback. So let's go ahead and kick things off. Start off by going to the phones. We've got Josh calling in, and Josh wants to take a couple minutes here and talk to us about the Ohio State product, rookie wide receiver Devin Smith. So let's see what Josh has to say. Josh, how you doing tonight?
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Yeah, I'm just happy about Devin Smith in general. I think it's a really good move. And just pretty much what I saw highlights in his play, and I could tell why they say he's like a Macklin. Like he got like a ability that he could read deep coverage. I see that when they try to do cover plays on him, that he could just fade away, and he had the speed to make a safety on him. Like, I can see, like, Geno Smith, once again, it's his job to lose. He got a lot of weapons and a lot of weapons that could teach Devin Smith, but what's your thoughts on that?
I think you're absolutely right. I think Devin Smith is a guy who is a great pick for a lot of reasons, very similar to the Bryce Petty pick, really, and the Leonard Williams pick. I think the thing that a lot of these guys have in common is that they possess particular skill sets that are going to allow them to be successful at the next level, but there's not going to be as much of a rush to get them in there. Now, Devin Smith, as you mentioned, he's going to draw safety coverage. He's going to draw a lot of attention. He has the type of skill set that's going to demand attention from the defense. You know, he should hopefully do what Percy Harvin was brought in to do last year and at least open things up a little bit underneath. So when you bring a guy like that in here, and put him in a role where he doesn't have to be a superstar from the get-go, where we hear a lot of people talk about how, you know, the guy, he can only run the 9 route, he's a one-trick pony. You know, that may be the case, but at this point in time, when you've got Decker on one side, Marshall on the other, Curley in the slot, Cumberland and Amaro at the tight end spots, you can have a guy who can only do one thing as long as he does it well and draws attention away, draws coverage away from those other guys. And you know, his numbers, obviously, he averaged over 28 yards a catch at Ohio State last year, which is just ridiculous. You know, obviously it's not the pros, but that's big-time college football. When you're putting up that type of production in any offense, in any system, you just can't ignore that. So the Devin Smith pick is a great pick. We heard about him making a big catch today. You know, it's day one of camp. And some people get a little bit out of hand.
Yeah, it's day one.
It's, you know, you got to reel it in. I think we should know as Jet fans, we've had quite a few training camp superstars that never even see the field before they're out of the league. But obviously, I don't think that'll be the case with him. But sure. Yeah, I agree with you. He's a guy who brings a dimension to this offense they haven't had in quite some time. Of course, he's similar to what they were hoping to get when they drafted Stephen Hill out of Georgia Tech. We all know that didn't work out. Hill was a guy who was raw. He needed a lot of time to develop. And as we've seen with a lot of Jets rookies, he didn't get that time. He was rushed into the starting lineup, had one big game against Buffalo, and then kind of disappeared for the rest of the year. A lot of fans are down on Stephen Hill. I think he was put in a bad situation and didn't get that time that you would like. But as I said, with Petty, with Leonard Williams, with Devin Smith, these guys are going to have the time. Now, not so much with Leonard Williams now, of course, with the Sheldon Richardson development. You know, we have no idea where this is going to go. You know, everyone was talking about how Sheldon Richardson has been handed a 4-game suspension for the positive marijuana test. You know, we don't know what the league is gonna pile on top of that, and if the league is gonna wait, because Richardson isn't due in court until October 27th. So there's a while till he has to face the music, and I think the league will let that play out. But that just opens up a whole new can of worms. You know, I felt like with the pot conviction, it was a foolish move, but you can maybe write it off and say, okay, young kid, mistake. Hopefully he'll learn from it. You know, not only does he not learn from it, he compounds it by doing something significantly worse just a couple of weeks later. Again, going out, 143 miles an hour in a 50-mile-an-hour zone. You know, as I said in the opening, as far as I'm concerned, he's getting off easy. If those are the only charges he's facing for what he did, then he should be counting his blessings, because he could be facing a lot more than that if the reports are accurate and if the legal system if the courts had chosen to pursue additional charges. But I like your point on Smith. I think that he's a guy who, again, brings a dynamic to the offense we haven't had in quite some time.
Yeah. I got one more thing to say, if you don't mind. Smith is an important topic to me. I need to get this off my chest about Geno Smith. Geno Smith, when he first Rex Ryan somehow pulled that miracle when he was a rookie, because there was no way he was 8-8. You know what I'm saying? And everybody was so thinking that he had the receiver core, which he didn't. Kind of hard to play football when he's always on his butt, and receivers not pulling their routes, not making it there in time. You know what I'm saying? Like, yes, he made some bad moves too, but I'm a Geno fan. You know, I'm giving a shout out for Geno. We need you to go hard. You got weapons now. Hopefully you listen to that, but that's some real. What you think about that?
I see what you're saying. There is validity to it. You know, as Geno's a polarizing figure. Anytime you have a struggling quarterback, especially a struggling young quarterback, you're going to have that one segment of the fans that see the potential and they want to focus on that. But then you're going to have the other segment of the fans that they just want to focus on the on-field results and they can't look past it and be positive. And, you know, I'm going to be fully honest and say that I have had my issues as a fan watching Geno, and I've had my moments where I feel like he's not the guy and it's never going to click for him. You know, the truth is we don't know that. But we do know that, you know, based on his on-field production, he's been bad enough that you can't ignore the numbers he's put up. I get that he hasn't had superstars, but if you go back and watch film from some of the games he had last year, the San Diego game comes to mind for me, because as much of a debacle as that was, I went back and watched that game and he had several opportunities where he had receivers wide open and then he was overthrowing, underthrowing, a couple throws where, you know, he was under some pressure on the run, but you have to make a play at some point. So I want to be objective. I don't want to be too extreme one way or the other. I'm not going to lie on day when emotions are running high. You're probably more critical than you are when you have a chance to sit down and think about it rationally. So yeah, I've been critical. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, like in Geno Smith, yes, he made some plays that I never expect him to make. You know what I'm saying? But what I'm getting at is we didn't have the best line in the world. We was lucky that we got some good runs, like run plays on Chris Ivory. You know, he's a working horse. But what I'm saying is, if Geno Smith could stay a little clean, I think he could think more. I think, you know, our new offensive coordinator, I think he could actually bring him along. I think, you
That's
know, I think, like, no one cares, like, everybody expecting him to lose, but that's his motivation, you feel me? That's what he had left. That's all he had left.
That's a good point. I just want to step in 1 second here. I'm just seeing this breaking from NFL.com. Sheldon Richardson, they are saying that the charges on Sheldon are going to be not only resisting arrest, he is going to be facing charges for endangering the welfare of a child. That's the one charge I was surprised that we didn't see with the initial reports. So as of right now, endangering the welfare of a child, resisting arrest. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I did want to get that out there for those. But yes, in terms of your points about Geno, he has been in a less than ideal situation. And I think that one unfortunate circumstance for Geno is that the guy, I think that without realizing it, he's kind of suffering from the play we saw for so many years from Mark Sanchez. You know, Jets fans we're just fed up with, I mean, I've said it before, only half jokingly, but this team, we've had some years where we would have been thrilled to have a mediocre quarterback because we've had some great defenses, but the quarterback play has just been, has been bottom of the league for so many years now that I think fans are kind of at their wit's end. So they were so hopeful that Geno would be a departure from what we saw in Sanchez. And I think if he'd been more consistent with the on-field results and not some, you know, you can't expect a guy that came from the air raid offense in college coming into the NFL, you can't expect him to light it up. But I think the issue that at least for me, right, and I know other fans, is the inconsistency and the making the same mistakes. You know, you want to watch him and you want to feel like, okay, he's growing, he's learning. And, you know, he had the strong finish this year, but fans are worried because he also had a strong finish last year. So, you know, you don't want it to be fool's gold. You don't want it to be a situation where 2 years in a row you buy into a strong late season performance. But listen, you know, there are some people in the business. I know, Gino, a lot's been made of the ESPN poll this past week where they rated him as 32nd out of 32 quarterbacks based on the opinions of some GMs, coaches, former players, I believe. And Gino, you know, he said he laughed it off. He said it was hilarious, which I'm sure he doesn't think it's hilarious. But in all honesty, whatever you feel about Gino, it's a silly question to ask. There's no right answer to that. Of course, he's not happy that a panel of experts have said that he is the worst starting quarterback in the NFL. You know, if the media is going to do their job, they're going to ask the question, Gino, there's really no right answer for it other than to say, yeah, I laughed it off. And I get that. So I understand where he's coming from with that. And I understand, again, I see both sides. Gino has been bad, but the potential is there because you do see he can make all the throws. I think the biggest issue for him, this, you know, from my a fan's perspective, I've never pretend to be a talent evaluator, scout, anything like that. I'm a fan like the rest of us, but we see him make a lot of the same mistakes, and we see him not hitting open receivers. And, you know, that's some of the stuff that was cited in the article that named him among the worst. So I just want to take the time to thank you for your call, Josh. Always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for calling in.
All right, and go Jets.
All right, absolutely. Have a good day. All right, so joining us now, as I said earlier, from Sports Illustrated, Greg Bishop, former beat writer for the Jets, covered the Seahawks for a while, and recently cover story for Sports Illustrated with Darrelle Revis that he did a couple months ago, I believe. The story was written and released recently. A great read. If you haven't read it, you really should. It gives some insight into Revis, his upbringing, and let's go ahead and get Greg on the air now. Hey, Greg, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Greg. Real pleasure to have you. Had a chance to read that Revis story a couple days ago and came away really impressed. Definitely enjoyed getting some insight to you know, what makes him tick and what the you know, the formative years with Sean Gilbert. Of course, you know, Jets fans who lived through those holdouts with Revis hold a lot of that against Gilbert, but, you know, there is the side of it where these guys approach it like a business, like a job, and, you know, for them that's what it is. It's obviously a little tougher for fans to dissociate with that because we're more emotionally involved than a lot of the players are. But wanted to ask you about one of the comments. Actually, first, if you have a second, not to put you on the spot, and you may not have heard the breaking news yet, I'm not sure. If you had any thoughts, actually, I'll bring you up to speed. Sheldon Richardson, it's been reported today that a couple of weeks after the league announced his suspension for marijuana, positive marijuana test, he's been he was arrested for drag racing, apparently doing 143 miles an hour in a 50-mile-an-hour zone. Tried to get away from the police. Once the police caught up to him, they discovered he had a loaded gun and a 12-year-old child in the car with two other adults, as well as the odor of marijuana. Now we're just seeing on NFL Network that Richardson is, in fact, being charged not only with resisting arrest, which is what the initial report said, but he's also going to be facing charges for child endangerment. Any thoughts on that? Never a dull moment in Jets land?
Yeah, you know, that's really serious stuff. I did see the releases as they came out earlier today. But to be honest with you, Glenn, I think what it felt like to me was I got kind of a tremor. Like, you know, it reminded me of the years I covered the Jets, and I remember in 2008 and 2009, you couldn't wake up without something happening. You know, it was trading for Brett Favre or Braylon Edwards' DUI or Rex Ryan's foot fetish allegations or Sanchez dating the 16-year-old. You woke up every day and you never know what's going to happen. I remember one time I had friends in town from Seattle and we went to see Wicked and I had to leave like an intermission because some crazy thing had happened. And, you know, this is obviously very serious. I don't mean to make light of it, but it did give me a kind of a shock back to what it was like. And I do feel for my comrades that are still on that jet speed.
Yeah, I mean, really just a bizarre story. And I'm not one that ever buys into curses or anything like that. I don't believe in any of that stuff. But it's just such an unbelievable run that this team has had. When you look at it, when you look at the last few picks, the last few first-rounders they've had that have been legitimate, bona fide first-rounders, you know, now, of course, we're all thrilled in Jets land that Darrelle Revis is back. But, he had that acrimonious time here where, you know, full disclosure, I, as a fan, by the time he hit that second holdout, like a lot of fans, I was a little upset with that. And then I think he even commented after signing the deal after the second holdout that he wasn't going to rule out another holdout in a year or two. So, you know, there was that disaster that led to that. I mean, how many teams are put into a situation where they end up trading away the best player, arguably, in several decades, as they were with Revis? And now the next most talented guy you could make a case is probably Sheldon Richardson. I mean, this is a guy at 24, Defensive Rookie of the Year. You look at some of the performances he had last year on a team that was playing for nothing by the midway point, and the guy just never lets up. He's 100% full on. He looks great, and so they get these superstar players when they do hit in the draft, and it seems like there always has to be some drama, which really is why I feel like Muhammad Wilkerson has some more leverage now, because he's the only guy who's been a great player and, you know, kept his name out of the headlines for negative reasons. But
Sure.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I think it's interesting, you know, the way that it's just one more kind of footnote in Jets history, you know. It would be nothing if it wasn't always eventful, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not one thing, it's another, and it really does get frustrating. But there was one comment you had, or one comment that Revis made during your interview with him for SI that kind of grabbed some headlines, and fans were talking about it. I know a lot of Jets fans were kind of divided. Was his comment about how his first time around in New York, they had a great team, but they came up short because they didn't have an elite quarterback. And as you say in the article, he probably realized that was a little bit harsh and said that Mark Sanchez was solid, but he wasn't elite. Now, I mean, everyone has their own definition of solid, but to me, a guy who throws 12 touchdowns and 20 interceptions and completes fewer than 55% of his passes, I don't know if that would fall into my definition of solid. So, really, that team was able to overcome some putrid quarterback play and get within one game of the Super Bowl. But how do you feel about? Do you think Revis was on the mark with those comments, or do you think that Sanchez was deserving of a little more credit for what those teams did?
No, I agree with you. I should preface what I say by saying I enjoyed covering Mark. His family was always very good to me. I always found him to be a nice guy. Nothing personal, but I was surprised when the story ran and people were saying that this was a shot, that Revis had gone out of his way to diminish Sanchez. It was sort of a throwaway line in the middle of 5 days' worth of interviews. It was just something he had said, but it was true.
And I don't think you can look at Mark Sanchez. I don't think anybody in that watches football in America can look at Mark Sanchez and think that he's an elite quarterback. I think that that's just crazy. I mean, if he was an elite quarterback, how many elite quarterbacks are there in the league? There are 10, 12, maybe, and, you know, every other team is kind of still searching for one, including the Jets. I mean, if he was elite, he'd be starting somewhere. He would have started longer. I mean, to Sanchez's credit, he played pretty well in the playoffs, particularly in 09. He had a very good game against the Colts when they lost out there that passed to Braylon Edwards, I still remember. And so it wasn't like he was killing their playoff chances. It was just, I think, that their offense wasn't as good as their defense. Their defense was going to have to carry their offense. And if they were going to win, it would be in spite of Mark Sanchez and not because of him. We wrote that for years. So I was surprised when it came out and everybody acted like Revis had shot him in the back. It didn't feel that way to me at all.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think some fans are just so divided, and there are still fans that do have some animosity toward Revis. Not many, but I felt like the comment was on the mark. And even, you know, you mentioned his performance against the Colts and the fact, you know, Sanchez did win 4 playoff games. And I think because of the emotion, you know, again, you get caught up in the moment with these games, and you kind of convince yourself he's better than he was. When you go back and look at those playoff games, he had a really nice game against the Pats. That was probably his best game when they beat the Patriots up in Foxborough. He threw a few touchdowns, didn't throw any picks. But you know, that game against San Diego, that round one game, no touchdowns, no interceptions. He had games where he threw for less than 200 yards, completed half his passes, where he really just he barely did enough to not lose. These were games where the defenses were playing great, and it's hard for me to fathom that people are saying, I've come across Jet fans who have claimed that the loss in Indianapolis was on the defense, when really I don't know how many people expected the Jets to beat Peyton Manning when all they had in the defensive backfield was a young Revis, and then you had Strickland, Marcus Coleman, and Drew Coleman, rather, and Eric Smith trying to stop Peyton Manning. It just wasn't going to happen. The fact that they were there was a miracle in itself. So I agree 100%. I think Revis's comments were on the money, and fans sometimes just want a little something to get riled up about. But another question I had about Revis, because you mentioned in the article how he doesn't like being viewed as a mercenary. He doesn't see himself that way. He doesn't see it as if he's about the money, and that he genuinely is happy to be back in New York. Now, of course, the popular thought process is that he was going to go where the money was, whether it was New York or New England or anywhere, that was going to be the main factor. How genuine did he seem to you when he was expressing to you his feelings for New York? And I know you mentioned his first trip into the city, and you know, he made a poor decision to have his first meal at TGI Fridays. But what kind of feel did you get from him? Does it really genuinely mean something to him to be a Jet?
You know, that's a good question, and it's a fair question. I should preface my answer by saying I don't really get fans sometimes. The logic that people apply to their everyday life, they don't really apply to football, even though it really is for these players their everyday life. I mean, people that say that Revis only took the money, I mean, he could have played for 31 other franchises for that kind of money. I mean, New England would have offered him maybe not 14 and a half, but, you know, he made 12 last year. We're not looking at, it's not like the Jets offered him $40 million more than any other team. I mean, what they did is offer him a little bit longer security and the chance to go somewhere he was familiar with. Do I think that money's not a factor? Absolutely not. And that's pretty clear, I think, in the story that Revis says money is a factor, and it always has been a factor for him. Do I think New York is a factor? Yeah, I definitely do. I think the difference between Revis and the way that the general public looks at football is that he doesn't see all this stuff as mutually exclusive. He thinks you can play for a team you want to play for and work your ass off and make a bunch of money and hold teams hostage and do all that, because that's just the normal course of doing business. And you know, I don't know what you do, for work, but I think that's the way my business works. You know, like, you make as much money, you go where you can. You know, if you like working somewhere, maybe later you go back there and you make more money, but you do it where you want to live. I mean, I don't know. I don't have as much of an issue with it as people do. People say it's all about the money. I don't think that's true. People say it's not about the money, and that's definitely not true either. I just think he thinks all these things can work in tandem. And that it's not like a bad thing to want to make the most money you can. I mean, you want to, I want to. Every Jets fan that's killing Revis wants to, unless they just want to, you know, live in their parents' basement or something like that. I mean, I don't understand it sometimes. I don't mean to get on a rant here, but I don't begrudge a guy who's putting his body on the line every Sunday for wanting to make the most money that he can.
I think you make a valid point. I think, at least from my perspective, I think a lot of times fans, they're a little bit, I don't know if disillusioned is the right word. You know, I know at some point when I was younger, of course I grew out of it, but you want to believe that these players love this team as much as you do. And these fans have so much invested in, you know, the thought of rooting for another team, you wouldn't even entertain it. So you kind of apply that logic and say, well, if I would never root
right.
for them, why would this want to play for them? But that's not the way it works. You know, the way I've explained it to people in the past is, if wherever you may work, if you work at Coke and Pepsi offers to pay you more, are you loyal to Coke? That loyal to Coke that you're going to turn down extra money? In all reality, no. But and that's where you're right, that they don't apply their everyday logic to the logic of the everyday life of a player.
And here's the other part of that I think is really important when you're talking about teams and loyalty. You know, Revis said pretty clearly to me, and I've seen it elsewhere since, that, you know, he met with John Idzik in Idzik's office. You know, he told him he wanted to stay. He told him he was under contract. This is directly from Durrell. And then he gets hurt and they cut him. So, you know, a fan can be loyal to a team, but they don't have to worry about the team being loyal to them in return, other than the team spending money and trying to win and do the things that it's supposed to do anyway, right? But Revis has to worry, is the team still going to want him? You know, I talked to Bart Scott for that story. He's a friend of mine. I've known him for many years. You know, when he played well, they gave him a big contract. When he didn't play well, they asked him to come in and restructure it. And so it's no different the other way. But fans, I think, have a misguided notion that it's okay for a team to say, yeah, you didn't have a good year, so take half the money we're supposed to pay you that we agreed to pay you. But if you have a good year, you can't come in and say, hey, I want more money. I mean, to me, that just doesn't make any sense.
Right, exactly. It's all kind of slanted in one way and not more down the middle. But my next question, because you're in Seattle now and you spent some time there previously, of course, you have kind of eyes on up close and personal with Seahawks. And this is something to me, in all honesty, it becomes a hot topic among fans. When you compare Revis to Sherman, you know, to use a baseball analogy, I always remember as a kid, I grew up in the Bronx. I grew up a Yankee fan. And there was always the debate in the late 80s, early 90s about, you know, who was the better defensive first baseman? Was it Don Mattingly or Keith Hernandez? And I saw them ask Mattingly that one time, and he gave the perfect answer. He said, listen, as long as I'm in that discussion, I'm happy. It really doesn't matter which one of us is better. If you're telling me I might be the second best, I can live with that. And that's kind of the way I feel about Revis and Richard Sherman. They're among the best in the league. If you have either one of them on your roster, you should feel extremely fortunate to do so. But as a guy who's covered Revis up close and now being in Seattle, seeing Sherman up close, if you could take one of those guys, which one would it be?
No, sure. That's a great question. You know, I think Revis looks at it the way you look at it. I think he's just happy to be in the conversation. I would say that I think the arguments against Sherman are pretty valid. I buy into them. So, you know, Revis, the fact that he can take away one side of the field or one guy, you know, sometimes last year was the number two receiver often for the Patriots. When he was with the Jets, obviously, he was often the best receiver. And to be able to just remove that kind of element and limit an offense the way that Revis can on a weekly basis, I think makes the argument for him as the stronger corner. I also think that Sherman's benefited from playing with a guy like Earl Thomas, who, in my opinion, is the best free safety in the league. And a guy like Cam Chancellor is not too shabby in his own right. I mean, the strength of that defense is the back. They have a great front seven, you know, same as the Jets do. And so, you know, I think they're both great players. I love watching Richard Sherman. You know, it's fun to watch him lock down people when I'm not on the road visiting other teams. But if I'm picking one guy tomorrow that I got to stake my, you know, bet on, I'd take Revis over him.
And that's, I think that's the thing. You know, all bias aside, as a Jets fan, I think it is a completely valid argument that, you know, Revis does cover the best receiver on the other team. And it's, you know, in a way, it's not fair to Richard Sherman. It's not, you know, he has nothing to do with the way that the Seahawks run their scheme. If that's what they ask him to do, it's not to say Richard Sherman can't do it. The difference is that he's not asked to do it. So until he is, you're going to go with the guy who shows he can do whatever he's asked to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think that it's almost like picking your favorite ice cream, right? I mean, it's pretty good either way.
Absolutely, absolutely. So any thoughts, quick thoughts you could offer on the team this year? Of course, an incredible offseason, one of the best Jets fans have seen in years, brought in a ton of Pro Bowl talent, filled, you know, of course, you know, with the exception of the quarterback position, they filled a lot of holes that they had on defense. They brought in a receiver in Brandon Marshall, number one receiver. And just across the board improvements. I think you'd be hard pressed to find a team that made that addressed their needs in a bigger way than the Jets did. Of course, now you're on the national level. You're not following them on the beat, but I'm sure that there's still some connection there where you keep an eye on the Jets. What are your thoughts on the moves they made this year?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I actually said this on WFAN the other night. I think that they are among the more interesting teams in football this year, and I think it's pretty safe to say the AFC East is easily one of the more interesting divisions, maybe the most interesting as we head into the season. You know, when I look at the Jets, I see a defense that potentially could be top five. I mean, you know, if they can keep other guys in the lineup, you know, the defensive line is obviously a major strength. They just made way better. You know, a big Leonard Williams guy. I thought he was the best player coming out of this last draft. Overall, the secondary, I was surprised when I looked at the numbers when I was doing the Revis story that they were 14th against the pass last year. I thought they were way lower the way you hear people talk about them in New York. You know, I think Cromartie still got something. I think Bowles knows that. I think Buster Skrine was a great pickup. You know, I think Todd Bowles is a coach. I think very highly of him. I'll be interested to watch his schemes and how they unfold. And then I think it's pretty easy to say that they got better offensively. I mean, you add a guy like Brandon Marshall should make you better. Jason Merrill being in the system another year should make him better. They've got a bunch of running backs, all of them with question marks. But, you know, that's okay with the platoon style we see in the NFL now. And so I heard you guys talking when I was coming on. Geno Smith, obviously, I think is sort of the kind of the key to all of it. If he can play at a level that puts him in position to win games and not lose them, maybe we are seeing a repeat of some of those early Mark Sanchez years. You know, maybe we're going to have to wait to see them retool the offensive side a little more. And then, you know, you look at the division, you got Rex in Buffalo. You got all this crazy stuff going on with the Patriots. You got Shady up in Buffalo. You've got the Dolphins, too, and Tannenbaum being there. It's like a family feud, but everybody's reorganized. And, like, you know, the team that won the title, everybody's thinking that they cheated. And the whole thing to me, just like, I think it would be really interesting for a writer to just follow the AFC East throughout the season.
Yeah, the moves that have made within that division are going to make it one of the more interesting divisions in the NFL this year. And I think the defensive lines that these teams have put together, especially the Bills and Dolphins, are going to make the guard position that much more critical. So the Jets are going to have their work cut out for them across the board, really, because if Geno's going to make that next step, he's going to need the protection to do it. And if it's not there, then a lot of the talk about hoping he'll do this better, do that better, if he's not going to have the time to throw, then it's not going to matter. And they are in a division where if your offensive line isn't completely up to snuff, then you're not gonna have that time to throw. But I just wanted to take the time to thank you very much for joining us. Nice to have you on, Greg. Again, great piece. For those of you Jets fans out there who haven't had the chance yet to read Greg's piece in Sports Illustrated on Darrell Revis, his time with the Jets, his time in New England, then his return to the Jets. Really, really great article. Talks about his upbringing. And a must-read for any Jets fan. And good luck out there in Seattle, Greg. If you're ever going to be in Dobbs Ferry, let me know. Be happy to come up there and join you for a beer. And a big shout-out to Joe Karakunis for setting this up for us.
Yeah, no problem. You know I got a room up there. You know, my buddies, the Kanakaraj brothers, I got a room at their mom's house that I stay when I'm hanging out up there. So you never know. Well, I'll definitely take you up on that.
Well, hey, I plan on going to a couple games with Joe this meet there. So if you're going to be coming along or meeting up with them, let me know. Hang out and talk Jets football.
Hey, always looking forward to talking Jets football. I still read the clips, even though I haven't been on the beat for years. It's never a dull moment around there for sure. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thanks, Greg. Take care.
All right.
So that was Greg Bishop from SportsIllustrated.com. Big thanks to him for taking the time to join us. And now I want to bring in Nick. Nick's been on hold for a while, and we really appreciate it. So what do you got for us tonight, Nick?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. How you doing, buddy?
It's going pretty well. I guess I kind of want to talk about Geno Smith. And I really want to talk about the plan that is going to start to be implemented, that we can tell from the first day, as Geno wasn't exactly, you know, as sharp can be. So I'm starting to get worried that it's happening already, since people are calling for him, for Fitzy to start, or for Bryce Petty to be moved up so fast. So I'm a little worried that were going to start this business, and I was wondering what you thought about the kind of philosophy that I've had about Gino and that I had about Mark Sanchez, is that maybe it's best if they look at Gino and they say they see that he's got the tools. If they assess him, they assess his game for the last 2 years, and they think he's got the right tools, maybe you just stick with him. Maybe you just make him your quarterback. You commit to Gino and say, hey, we got you the best offense we've had in the last couple of years. You're our starter. Completely go out there and throw 5 interceptions. It's not about that. It's about getting better this year. And obviously, that's a very unrealistic thing for fans to buy into. But it might be the best thing for the football team to give this guy, because, you know, as we know in the NFL, these guys do not have a very long leash. And maybe if they stuck with these guys he was a second-round pick for a reason. He was highly touted. It's supposed to be a top-5 pick. There was a reason he was so highly touted. You give him a chance and stop all this nonsense. Today was the first day of training camp, and they're already talking about cutting his head off. And I'm really worried that it's going to just kill his confidence, and the season's going to end before it even starts.
Well, I see what you're saying. I think a big product of that, the overreaction from the fan base based on one day of practice, a lot of it is not being able to let go of the past. And let's face it, Gino has played poorly more often than he's played well. Fans don't forget that. As I mentioned earlier, we see a lot of the same mistakes out of him. But at the same time, day one of camp, I'm not too worried with how the guys looked or how fans react to it, because the reality of the situation is that, you know, this is what Chan Gailey's there for. This is what Todd Bowles is there for. These guys have an opportunity to look at Geno's film. They can decide for themselves whether or not he is completely to blame for the failures he has had. You know, we as fans, we tune in, we watch, and we kind of like to believe we know exactly what's going on, but you know, one of my favorite press conferences is that Jim Mora clip where he cuts a reporter off and just says, look, you think you know, but you really don't, you know. And the truth of the situation is that more times than not, the coaches have, you know, infinitely more knowledge of what they are doing or trying to do than what we do as fans. So while the production may not be there, it's up to the coaches to determine the cause of the lack of production. If they determine it is Gino, I have no problem with them pulling him. You know, but the reason, and I wrote about this earlier this offseason, the reason I am such a big fan of the Chan Gailey hire, and the reason I have so much confidence in Chan Gailey, and I think it really is the perfect hire for Geno Smith, is that if you go back as a Jet fan, you know, people sometimes get caught up in Gailey's head coaching record with the Bills and how he did with the Cowboys, where he didn't have a great deal of success in terms of wins and losses. But if you just look at what his quarterbacks did when he was the head coach and what his quarterbacks have done when he was the offensive coordinator, with the lone exception of John Elway, which was, I mean, let's face it was a different league back then, but because Gailey worked with Elway in Denver. But if you go from there and you track Chan Gailey's career as an offensive coordinator, if you look at what he did in Pittsburgh with Mike Tomczak and Cordell Stewart, or if you look at what he did in Miami with Jay Fiedler, or if you look at what he did, of course, as we all know, Ryan Fitzpatrick played his best football under Chan Gailey in Buffalo. And even if you look at Tyler Thigpen played 1 year under Chan Gailey as a seventh-round draft pick who started the season as a third-string quarterback, was forced into action due to injuries to the first two guys ahead of him, and the guy went out there and threw 17 touchdowns and 8 interceptions as a seventh-round rookie who started the year as a third-stringer. And Geno Smith has come nowhere near that. So my point is, with Geno, put him in there. Let the decision makers, if they feel like he's the best guy for the job, put him in there. And if he can't succeed with Chan Gailey, then I have a hard time believing he's going to succeed with anyone. Because every single quarterback he has worked with has played their best football under him. If you look at all these guys, the Tomczaks, the Stewarts, the Fiedlers, you go back and look at what they did before they worked with Gailey, and you look at what they did after he left, and none of them were able to match the success they had when he was there. When Jet Nation interviewed Jay Fiedler following the hire, Jay Fiedler said, Chan Gailey is a guy who makes the best use of what he has, and he takes the input from his players. Chan Gailey wants to hear from his guys. He's going to pull his offense aside and say, what do you feel comfortable running? What play do you feel like you can execute best right now? And he wants that feedback, and you can't argue with the track record. No, he hasn't had, you know, top 10 offenses, which is what a lot of people focus on following the hire, he's had some fairly low-ranked offenses, let's be honest. But to me, I just consider the fact that what did he have to work with? If you can show me that he worked with four or five quarterbacks who played poorly under him and then went elsewhere and excelled, then I would say, okay, he was the problem. But really, Chan Gailey, for a lot of these guys, was the best thing they had going for them. So I agree that Geno, or I don't have a problem, I should say, with, if Geno is named the starter, but I would like it to be done through a legitimate competition. I understand the concern about, you know, let's just hand him the job and stick with him and ride through it. I would be able to live with that if they hadn't had this offseason they just had. I mean, this general manager, Mike Maccagnan, just went out and had an offseason that said, we're trying to win now. And whether fans want to accept that, you know, some fans are coming at this with low expectations, saying, well, you know, we only won four games last year. I don't care. This team, you don't have last year's roster. Your starting cornerback, the guys who were starting at cornerback for you last year on opening day are now, one of them's the backup safety and the other one's the fifth or sixth string cornerback. This team is so much better than what they had last year that the expectations have to be so much higher. I saw a piece the other day from Brian Baldinger, former player, current NFL analyst, and he said, look, I'm shocked that this team doesn't win 10 games. This team should be in the playoffs. Geno Smith, you know, again, Chan Gailey, get the best out of him with this defense they put together. I would be disappointed, honestly, if Geno was struggling and they stuck with him and they're going out there losing games every week, 13-10 and 17-10, because they're not putting up points. This defense should be, at least on paper, this is as good as the defense they had in 09 when they were number one in the NFL. When you have that type of defense, I say don't roll the dice. I say go ahead and put the best guy in there to put points on the board and win some games.
Yeah, man, I agree with you. I guess where we differ is, and I guess I'm viewing sticking with Geno as the best remedy for that, because to your point, Ryan Fitzpatrick was with Chan Gailey, who I agree was a great hire and was the guy that really got Ryan to play the best year he was. But even in those years, and I believe it was 2011 where Ryan Fitzpatrick had the great first three games, he collapsed. So maybe Ryan Fitzpatrick, it's happened before with the Bills. And yes, the Jets now are significantly better than the Bills were in 2011. But Fitzpatrick's also significantly older than he was in 2011. And Bryce Petty, as everybody knows, whatever you hear from any coach, he's not ready to play yet. Therefore, Geno is, by cross elimination, your best option. So I guess my concern is that it's just, if we know Geno's our best bet, because we are in a win-now situation, which I agree, and I think it's kind of hard to look at the roster and not agree, handle it a little bit differently. Don't try and make it like, I think the new regime is really focused on making a good impression and setting a culture, which is important, of competition, which I agree with. But I think Geno needs some reassurance, and I'm worried that he's not. I'm frankly worried he's not mentally tough enough to succeed if he does not have that reassurance. And for this win-now scenario, that could put that in jeopardy.
Well, to that point, if you're going to play quarterback in New York, the biggest market in the country, and if he's that lacking in self-confidence, if what they're going to need to do is take the pressure off him before the season even starts in order for him to excel, then I would be hard-pressed to believe he's going to succeed anyway, because he's going to have ups and downs. He's going to be criticized, whether it's losing confidence from having a quarterback brought in to compete with him for the job, or whether it's losing confidence when he's plastered all over the New York tabloids with the catchy headlines they like to put up to slam players when they're not performing. So as far as I'm concerned, if that's the concern about managing his psyche and kind of treating him with kid gloves, I don't think he could do that. I like the Bill Parcells approach. I liked how Parcells was tough on his players. He called them out in public. He called them out to the media. He called them out in the locker room. He tested their mental toughness, and he knew that he had to have guys that had that mettle, that had that ability to let that stuff roll off their backs. And if Geno's going to fail to succeed because he's being told he's going to have to compete, then I'm afraid, you know, he's not going to succeed in New York anyway.
Yeah, it looks that way, because that's, as you can see, as the boos rain today, he got worse and worse.
Yeah, he from what I was following, he had a couple of big throws, he had a bomb with Devin Smith, and again, you know, it's day one of camp. It's fun to see the feeds and see what's going on, but in all reality, You know, Gino had a great preseason last year. You know, if you're, I was one of the people that said, hey, look, it looks like he took the, made the leap. It looks like he took the next step. And it was preseason. You know, it's he's facing, you know, some backups, some starters, vanilla defenses. Nobody wants to tip their hand and put in anything advanced in terms of their weekly game plans. So, he exceeded in that setting. And then once the season started, played okay against the Raiders, who have been one of the worst teams in the NFL over the past decade or so. And then the wheels fell off as the competition got better. And, you know, some of the performances he turned in were unbelievable for an NFL quarterback. And I think, you know, when you look at that Buffalo game, what did he throw, 8 passes and 3 interceptions? It was difficult to even fathom. It felt like it was surreal to watch. So, this is just, I'm speaking basically about what we've seen from Geno on the field. I don't want anyone to get the impression I'm not rooting for the guy. You know, I've been hard on him at times, and a lot of people have, but I'm a Jets fan at the end of the day. I want Geno Smith to come out this year and light it up, and I would be more than happy to say, all right, he dialed it up when I thought he wouldn't, because, for the long-term health of this team, I don't want Ryan Fitzpatrick to be the answer or the better quarterback right now. If he is, I want him to play, but my hope is that he comes into camp and the preseason games start rolling out, and I hope Geno Smith outperforms Ryan Fitzpatrick and that he's our starter and he makes the leap starts at least show signs, take steps toward becoming that quarterback they wanted him to be when they drafted him. If he comes out and shows a lot of the same of what he has for the majority of his career thus far, then, you know, it's going to be time to get Fitzpatrick in there, continue to groom Petty, and, you know, take a look at another quarterback early in the draft again next year. But thank you so much for the call. Have a good night.
You too.
Thank you. Okay, so that was a great time being joined by Greg Bishop from SI. And, of course, as per usual, Geno Smith is the hot topic of conversation. As I said earlier, for the last few years, the quarterback position always seems to be the hot topic of conversation for the Jets. We have a little bit of time left. Wanted to talk about a few of the stories, some of the headlines we saw today during camp that I mentioned earlier, and just kind of share a few thoughts on some of these players. Starting off specifically with Marcus Gilchrist. As I said, brought in from San Diego to play safety. You look at some of the film on him last year, and, you know, he, like a lot of players, he had some good days and bad days, but, you know, he had some games where he shut down guys like Wes Welker, where, you know, he was staying stride for stride with some of the better slot receivers in the league. He in that 31-0 blowout against the Jets, where honestly it looked like everybody on the Chargers was playing a great game. But if you go back and watch that game, he spent most of his time on Jeremy Curley. He did a great job there. He covered Jeff Cumberland on one deep route right down the middle of the field, and he was with Cumberland stride for stride. Who's, you know, let's face it, Cumberland, despite his lack of production, one of the faster tight ends in the league. So on film, Gilchrist has done a lot of things that are far superior to what we've seen over the last couple of years. I know a lot of fans were down on Dewan Landry last year. To me, he was a solid guy. You know, fans rag on him a lot because he wasn't a playmaker. He didn't, not a lot of picks, not a lot of forced fumbles. But he was a guy that you could just count on to show up and do his job every day. And, you know, this is a league where not everybody's a superstar. Sometimes you just need some guys like that, some guys that show up and play well. That's what Dewan Landry was, but hopefully with Marcus Gilchrist, because let's face it, Marcus Gilchrist is going to be tested early and often, as he should be. If you're an opposing offense and you're planning to take on this Jets team, you're sitting down for your prep, and you're looking at Darrell Reeves on one side, Antonio Cromartie on the other, Buster Screen in the slot, and Dee Milliner, who I believe is, you know, again, the number one issue with him is health. I think Milliner's going to be a good player. Teams are going to try to attack the middle of the field. They're going to be looking at their tight ends. They're going to be looking for mismatches. And Gilchrist, when, you know, you look at who the Jets face early on, of course, week one is the Browns, which if they don't win that game, then I think we're going to have some meltdowns. But, from there, it's on to Indianapolis, where they're going to play the Colts. And, you know, you got Perryman out of Miami. The kid ran the fastest 40 in the combine. And I could see a situation where he'll be matched up a couple times with Gilchrist deep down the middle of the field. Then you're also going to have the following week when they take on the Philadelphia Eagles, Chip Kelly and his high-tempo offense. Of course, they have Jordan Matthews, the second-round receiver, or the second-year receiver from Vandy, who played really well at times last year. So, again, given the choices that opposing quarterbacks are going to have and who they're going to try to pick on, I could see Marcus Gilchrist getting a ton of action. So stay tuned and see what happens with that. In terms of that secondary, Antonio Cromartie, we saw his name a couple times today getting beat. Again, it's day one of camp, you know, no reason to get worked up. But looking back to 2 years ago, his what we thought was going to be his final year with the Jets, Crow struggled a lot, you know, and we know it was the hip. We found out after the season he had that nagging hip injury that had come back. Maybe that was the cause of it. And he picked up his play the following year and last year in Arizona with Todd Bowles. But now, which one shows up? Which Antonio Cromartie shows up? You know, Mike Maccagnan structured his deal in such a way that he's due to make $8 million this year. And if things don't work out well, the Jets can cut him loose, and there are no salary cap ramifications. So he's basically on a one-year show-me deal. And if he plays well, maybe he is retained. But I mean, really, if he could play well and still be shown the door if D. Milner steps up, because no need to pay Cromartie that type of money if they have a guy like Milner who's making a lot less if he's playing at a similar level. So Cromartie, in terms of the defense and the secondary, we'll see what we get from him. And, you know, the good news is there is if he does struggle, you have Buster Skrine, who spent a few years in Cleveland playing on the boundary opposite Joe Haden. So this is a guy that has experience. It's not a situation like last year where two guys get hurt and you're essentially starting, you know, safeties and undrafted free agents at the cornerback position. They have, you know, proven established veterans step into those roles, which is a far cry from what we've seen the last couple of years. The pass rushing situation, outside linebackers, Quentin Copels, you know, we've read a million articles about him. There's no need to rehash the potential and will this be the year and is he the guy? I mean, look, there's no denying, you know, from a physical standpoint, Quentin Copels might be the most talented player on the roster just in terms of his size, his speed, his athleticism. You know, what can he do? Is he kind of miscast as a linebacker? A lot of people felt that way when Rex Ryan moved him there, because as a rookie, he played his best football on the D-line. Moving him to the outside linebacker spot did hurt him a little bit. We've seen inconsistent production, and people have been that, you know, that was the book on him out of college. He was regarded as a top five prospect, and he fell in the draft, and a lot of people said it's because he does lose focus. So this year under Todd Bowles, who has a reputation for getting the most out of his players, as Chad Kaskaden said in a previous interview with Jet Nation, that if he can't make it in this offense, or in this defense, rather, you know, not sure he'll be able to make it in any defense anywhere. So no shortage of topics to follow, no shortage of stuff to talk about. It's great that football season is here. Of course, games, you know, we're not kicking off for another 6 weeks or so, but it's just nice that we're going to have fresh news, fresh reports. Jet Nation is going to be there at Florham Park during training camp. We're going to have reporters on the scene, and we're going to be either tweeting out or reporting live. And so we look forward to you guys joining us. Join our forums. Look in the forums for the talk about the off season, everything that's going on right now. Of course, the Sheldon Richardson situation, which is still yet to clear itself up. If he is indeed facing child endangerment and resisting arrest charges, this could get rather ugly. Of course, giving Mo Wilkerson a tremendous amount of leverage in his contract negotiation. So no shortage of news right now, both on and off the field. And thank you very much for joining us this week on Jet Nation Radio. Brandon Dowling will be back next week, and we look forward to seeing you then. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to the Brandon Dowling Show on Jet Nation Radio. And remember, you can hear us live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.